What's going on, everybody? You are tuned in to the Stoned On Sports podcast, where we believe that winning is the best high of them all. We've got a great show on tap for you tonight. We are going over our second base fantasy preview. That's right. We are headed to the Keystone position. Before we jump into that, though, I do want to say thank you to everybody that comes to hang out with us. Everybody in the chat, everybody that checks things out after the fact, really anyone who views any of our content at any point in time, we are incredibly grateful for it. We wouldn't be here without you. And yes, Dubo, that includes you, brother. I already see you there in the chat.
What's up, man?
Right on time, man. Right on time. Hope you're doing well. Somebody else I hope is doing well is my buddy Kyle here. How you doing, dude?
Not too bad. Getting excited to talk about second baseman. Also excited about the Super Bowl this weekend. You're coming up to Michigan this weekend to hang out. We'll have a good old time and watch one of these teams win or lose. But how you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I don't really have a dog in the fight for the Super Bowl, obviously, since, you know, the Lions, it is what it is. But I've been kind of perusing some of the props and you know, just some of the regular bets, trying to come up with my lock for the game. And I think I've found it. But we're going to talk about that on Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah, I got one up here, too. But all right. So second baseman this time. We got our rankings out. Marcus Semien's showing us the way there. obviously, bets at the top there with LB Semien. We'll talk about most of these in the top 12, not all of them. It's on the website, stonedonsportspodcast.com. The rankings are there waiting for you.
Absolutely. You ready to dive in?
Yes, sir.
All right. So first off the board, obviously, where's the button here? There it is. This guy out in Los Angeles, Mr. Mookie Betts. Right now, he's got an ADP of around 4 or 5, just kind of depending on your draft. Auction value at $43, which is a hefty sum. But what you're getting for that $43 is elite output. He was the number one second baseman last year. He's the number one second baseman off the board this year. He had 649 points last year, averaging 4.3 a game. He was the only second baseman over 600 points and over 4 points per game. Had 39 home runs, drove in 107, scored 126, which was first at the position. The RBIs were second, home runs were first. He had 14 stolen bases, 40 doubles, which Jeez. Was tied for first, which is just ridiculous. Yeah. You love that extra base power, especially in points leagues. He had a triple slash, a 307, a 408 on base percentage, 579 slug, good for a 987 OPS. He's had back-to-back seasons, over 35 home runs, and those are the only two of his career to reach that mark. His 40 doubles was the seventh time in his career that he's gone over that 40 mark, 115 runs for the fifth time in his career. You're seeing the power surge because he is pulling the ball at the highest rate of his career, 45.5% last season. And really two of the last 3 years, he's pulled the ball more than he has in his career. When you combine that with a 35.7% fly ball rate, which is about 12% over league average, you can see where the power is coming from. He hits the ball hard, both in terms of frequency of his hard hits, as well as his exit velo of 92.5 miles an hour, which are both well above MLB average. Dodger Stadium is somewhat neutral overall. However, there was the fourth most home runs hit there last year with 238. He's going to be hitting atop the best lineup in baseball, so you're going to see plenty of opportunity for runs. And usually leadoff hitters, their RBI opportunities are suppressed, but that Dodgers lineup just from top to bottom is fantastic, so you're going to see plenty of opportunity there. I really don't think he'll get a 100 again, but I do think he's well in line for 200 RBIs plus runs scored. He gets on base, like I mentioned earlier. He's got a walk rate of 13.9%, 5.5% over league average. And he only strikes out about 15% of the time, which is well below league average. And all that to say, I guess I took the scenic route to tell you this dude can friggin' rake. He's going to see plenty of pitches to hit with Freddie Freeman and Ohtani coming right behind him in the order. We're not going to see a return to 20 plus stolen bases, but his power numbers are definitely going to be there to more than make up for it. He does have second base and outfield eligibility. He is much more valuable as a second baseman, and he's still relatively young. He's at the back end of his prime. This will be his age 31 season. This season from him, I'm looking for about 35 home runs, maybe 85 to 90 driven in, and 110 or more runs scored. An absolutely fantastic pick at the top of your draft and somebody that you should be more than happy to build around.
Yeah, he's one of the first five picks off of every draft this spring, for sure. What I like about him, too, is he's out there, man. Durable. Hasn't played less than 122 games, only twice his rookie season and the pandemic season. I mean, I think that says a lot. He excels in those peripheral stats. Top 6 percentile for expected batting average, expected slugging, and average exit velocity. $43 with his multi-position eligibility, that extra value, is a steal. I have him for $35 this year on a team, and that's a deal.
Oh, shit. Yeah, it is.
Get him if you can. Holy cow. All right, we're headed down to Hot Atlanta. Had this guy on my team. Got him again this year. Ozzie Albies with the Atlanta Braves. ADP at 23 right now. Average auction value about $28. Number 3 second baseman last season. Scored 541 points. Averaging 3.7 fantasy points per game. Fourth in home runs with 33. First at the position, 109 RBI, scored 96 runs, 30 doubles, not quite 40, but 30 is outstanding as well, along with 13 stolen bases, slash line of 280, 336, 513, and an 849 OPS. Those career high 33 home runs and 109 RBIs. That was a part of his total of 68 extra base hits last season. That's a big improvement in his power numbers. I think he had a more patient approach at the plate last season, and it's definitely evident in his on-base percentage at 336. He increased that from 294 the season before. So he also increased his OPS 150 points, 703 to 849. he's a great player. His hard hit rate, fifth among second baseman with 500 plate appearances at 38.9. That's pretty good. And first among second baseman with 250 plus batting plate appearances with a 54.5% pull rate. Average in the MLB is about 40. So he pulls the ball there. I love it. Respectable strikeout rate at 16.2, walk rate at 7. Would like to see more stolen bases from him than 13. I mean, you got Freddie Freeman, who's markedly slower than him, stole 23. So he has lost a step. He was 88th percentile in his speed score in 2017. It's down to 54th percentile in 2023. So, but look who he's got hitting behind him. Matt Olson, Austin Riley. There's not much a need to take a chance when you got on a steal, when you got those guys batting behind you. So, the next guy, Semien. If you're splitting hairs between Albies and Semien, they're pretty identical in their stats. Go with the younger player. Ozzie Albies is 27. Semien will be 33 this season. I like him.
Nice. Nice. We got the triumphant return of Blue Jays. What's going on, brother? Appreciate you stopping back by. You know, Dubo knows what's up. Dodgers are loaded with talent. Absolutely. I mean, they open up the checkbook. They give Ohtani $700 million and Yamamoto another $300. I mean, you know, sure, I got a spare billion laying around to just plop out there to get me some new players. I think the big thing that I really like about Ozzie Albies is where he hits in the order. And you kind of brought it up too. He's hitting between Acuna and Riley, and that is driving him getting better pitches to hit. Yeah. His chase rate was down 7% year over year. And the number of pitches that he's seeing in the strike zone is up 5.2%. So I think his run production, and when I say run production, I'm talking about a combination of RBIs and runs scored. I'm expecting similar numbers to last year, especially if he makes some gains in his patience at the plate, because he's going to see plenty of pitches to hit.
I agree.
All right. So next on the docket, and you alluded to it, Marcus Semien. Look at that dude. He looks happy to be out there playing some baseball. I would be too if I was playing in that absolutely loaded lineup.
Yeah.
He was the number two second baseman last year. Right now, he's the number three second baseman off the board. ADP around 28, 29. You can get him for about $25. Scored 590 points last year, good for 3.6 per game. To put that in a little bit of reference, there were only four second basemen over 500 points. He was top five in the at the position in RBIs, in doubles, in runs scored. He was sixth in home runs with 29, carried an 826 OPS, about 120 points above league average. So he's out there. What I love about him is this dude plays every single day. He led the league in games played and plate appearances three of the last four seasons. He's led the league in at-bats and back-to-back seasons. He's missed one game in the last 3 years and hasn't been on the IL since 2017.
Sick.
He led the league in both runs and hits. He has 160 plus hits in each of his last five full seasons. So that, you know, we're not counting the 2020 season. Given his age, he's 33. I'm not expecting return to 45 home runs, but high 20s, low 30s is very doable, combined with about 180 or so combined runs plus RBIs. The same thing goes for him as it did for Mookie Betts. He leads off, and so that does limit RBI opportunity as a whole. But this is another lineup that is incredibly solid from top to bottom. He pulls the ball and hits fly balls well above league average, and that helps to drive his power because he doesn't really hit the ball particularly hard. He's actually in the bottom 30% for both hard hit rate and exit velocity. His strikeouts are way down over the past several years. It was 14.6% last season. To give you an idea, 21.8 is a major league average, so he's about 7% below average. And he was much more aggressive last year, swinging at the first pitch 36% of the time, while maintaining a below average chase rate and whiff rate. So chase rate just means, is he swinging at pitches outside of the zone? And whiff rate is just like it sounds. Do you swing and miss? I'm going to differ with you, though. I would rather have Semien than Albies if I'm playing for just this year in a redraft, just because of the slightly lower cost of acquisition. But in a dynasty or keeper league, absolutely Albies is the play.
Yeah. Semien's, I don't know if I heard you say this or not, but only four players scored more runs than Semien, and only seven other players reached triple digits and runs and RBIs last season. Guy's a beast. Pretty much you took all my notes, I think. So he's 33, but he doesn't look like he's slowing down. And I don't think that he will this season with the aforementioned lineup there in Texas.
Yeah. We got Blue. He's excited for the Super Bowl. We're going to be hitting on that on Thursday, brother. So make sure you stop back by. Too early for baseball for him. Look, I get it. Baseball is my first love. I absolutely love the game. And as you can tell while I'm talking, I love to nerd out on this shit. I understand these advanced analytics better than I understand what my team at work does. So we are going to be getting the podcast baseball league going here soon in the next couple weeks. And we'll make sure we let you guys know for those of you that are looking to join up. It's going to be fun, and hopefully we get some more consistent participation in that league than we do the football league, where, you know, people joined and then did fuck all for the duration. So,
right. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Okay. I'm excited for the Super Bowl. Matt's the baseball guy. I'm more of the football guy, but together we make it work. We make a strong team. I like it. So, all right, next on the board here, headed to San Diego. Ha-Seong Kim, ADP of 82, costing about $16 in auction leagues. Number 10 second baseman last season. He's pretty much the number 7th off the board for drafts this year. Scored 444 points, averaging 2.9 per game, 17 homers, 60 RBIs. He had 38 stolen bases. That was second among all second basemen and fifth in the entire NL for steals. He only had 12 the year before. So that them differences that the league made with the extra bases and the limited disengagements, it's really working for a lot of folks. He scored 86 runs, 23 doubles, slash 260, 351, 398, and 749 OPS. I think he was one of that team's most consistent performers all around last season. They had so many issues there. They were stacked with talent and really couldn't do much with it. But he set career highs in batting average at 260. The on base was a career high, slugging, the OPS, pretty much everything. Runs scored, all career highs. Played 152 games. He was consistent presence in that lineup. Had 626 plate appearances. What I love about him, man, guy's a lefty killer. Kills left-handed pitching. Versus right-handers, he slashes 241, 340, and 341 slugging. Strikes out 21.6% of the time. His ISO is 100 against right-handed pitchers. Left-handed, complete opposite. Slashes 302, 376, 521 with an 896 OPS. And a strike rate drops down about 5% down to 15.7. ISO a 219 versus left-handed pitchers. I love him because of that breakout campaign last season. He went from being a bargain to probably being overpriced this season. We'll see what how that falls out in a lot of drafts. He's multi-position eligible, shortstop, second, and third base. So maybe that draft day price you do pay for. I definitely think there's still improvement for him to make in his batting average if he can find a little bit more success against right-handers.
Yeah, I heard a kitty.
Yeah, somewhere around here.
I like him. I think he's a good player. He does not hit the ball hard. He's bottom 7% in both hard hit percentage and exit velocity. He's somebody that hits the ball on the ground a lot and hits a lot of line drives and relies on his speed, and he will pull the ball.
Yeah.
He's got an outside shot at a 2030 season. I think 1530 is more likely. I think if there's one area of opportunity or call it a wish list for him, he only had 40 total extra base hits last year. And when you look that 17 of those were home runs, I think there's some opportunity for gains there.
Yeah.
He's got an 86 percentile walk rate as well. So that's going to help keep him on base and on the base pass, which is up 3% year over year. He's a younger dude. There's opportunity for improvement there. There's opportunity for some gains. Do I think he's a little expensive this year? Yeah, a little bit. You know, you were saying the multi-position eligibility helps, and it certainly does.
Yeah.
But I think if he can continue to grow and continue to refine his approach at the plate, I think he's going to be even more expensive next year.
I think you're right.
So now we're going to head to the Windy City.
Shout out to Ramey.
Right. Nico Hoerner, Chicago Cubs. He's coming off the board around pick 57. You can pick him up for $22 on average. He is our number 6 second baseman. He was a number 4 second baseman last year. This year, he's the 5th one off the board. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you there. Hopefully it all makes sense. He was one of the 4 with 500 plus points last year, averaged 3.4 per game. 9 home runs, 68 RBIs. He scored 98 runs, which was 3rd at the position. His 175 hits were 4th, and he led all second basemen with 43 stolen bases. He had a triple slash at 283, 346, 389, good for a 729 OPS. And understand that is below league average by about 20 points. He's a very patient hitter with a 96 percentile strikeout percentage. It was 12.1%, that was actually up year over year. In 2022, it was at 11%. And he has a 99th percentile whiff rate at 12.4%. When this dude swings, he does not miss. There's not a whole lot of power there to speak of. He doesn't really hit the ball hard or elevate it. He's primarily a ground ball line drive hitter and relies on his speed. But once he's on base, look out. If you walk him, he's taking second.
Yeah.
Again, 43 stolen bases. He was only caught seven times, and that's where his value is derived from getting on base, scoring runs, and steals. He's another dude that only had 40 total extra base hits last season. It was an increase of three despite 15 more games played in 2023 than 2022. He does have dual eligibility at second base and shortstop. He is more valuable as a second baseman. He started off last year primarily as a leadoff hitter, but as the season went on, he got moved down to the two hole. I expect him to hit second again there this year. He's coming into his age 27 season. There's an opportunity there for some gains in his counting stats and maybe a little bit in the power, considering he's really only had two seasons of significant playing time. And he's got a decent frame, especially for second base. He's 6'1", 200 pounds. He's never going to be a 20 home run bat, but maybe he can squeak up to, you know, to 15 home runs. I think if he did that, you'd be very happy with that return, especially where you're drafting him.
I agree. I had him on my team last year for half a second. I think I traded him to you for somebody. I can't remember what, but you mentioned his steals. Only five more players in the major leagues had more steals than him. Acuna, Corbin Carroll, Bobby Witt Jr., and CJ Abrams. 86% success rate. Definitely should be able to get 40 again this season. And previously, before this season, he played in 247 games, only swiped 28 bases. Another player that's taking advantage of that, those rule changes as well. Maybe there's some regression in his batting average. I don't know. His expected was 272, but he has outperformed his expected batting average in each of the last three seasons. I think he's an ideal option if, like, the first couple hitters you draft are power. He'd be a nice one to go with the speed and the run scored to try and balance out your roster a bit. I like him. He, like Matt mentioned, he's not going to hit many home runs. His slugging was 383. He's career 384 in slugging. So he's right there. He offers value in other categories, but he's still, I think he's still valuable in points leagues.
Absolutely, he is. And more so, like, talking about the steals and the rule changes, I don't think it's so much the players taking advantage of it. I think it's the smarter teams that are taking advantage of it. The teams who lean more on analytics, you know, you've got the bigger base and that helps, especially when you consider just how many bang bang plays there are over the course of a season.
Yeah.
And you look back and, you know, we'll see that this weekend when we're hanging out and we fire up some MLBPA baseball. In the early 90s and the late 80s, it seemed like everybody stole 20 bases.
Sure.
You know, it was a bigger part of the game, and you know, the game evolves over time, and you know, hitters change their approach to counter pitching, and then the pitchers adjust, and it's back and forth and back and forth. But I think you're going to see even more gains this year around the league as a whole in stolen bases as more teams get accustomed to playing that style of ball.
Agreed. All right, we're headed up to the Bronx. Gleyber Torres, I know. Currently about the 8th second baseman off the board at an ADP of 86, costing about $15 average in auction values. Finished number 6 second baseman overall last season, 469 points, 3 a game. He averaged slash 273, 347, 453 with an 800 OPS. Played a career high 158 games last season. 28 doubles, 25 homers, 68 ribbies, 90 runs scored. He stole 13 bases as well. His walk rate rose last season, which was good. He went from 6'8 and 22 to 10 flat in last season, and a career low 14.6 strikeout rate. Excellent. He actually reduced his strikeout rate pretty decently from 2022, from 22.5 down to that 14.6. So he used that increased contact to raise his batting average to 273, which was nice. His expected was 283, but he didn't really lose anything in his slugging. So he's an everyday second baseman, should hit high in the batting order again. He's got a decent floor. He's produced at least 24 home runs in four of his five seasons. You remember he didn't really perform so well in 20 and 21. I think a lot of managers still underrate him. I think his current ADP seems pretty reasonable. He's a nice prime target in the middle rounds of the of most drafts, also in a contract year.
Bingo.
So I expect probably more runs scored and some more stolen bases from him.
Yeah, what I really liked was this was his first full season with fewer than 100 strikeouts, and that really shows his maturity at the plate. And if you think back to like his first couple of years in the league, everybody thought he was going to be the next big thing, right? And part of that is hype because he's playing in New York, and part of it was because he was beating the shit out of the ball. 2020 happens. 2021 happens, and now he's rebounding well. He's likely going to be hitting fifth in between Anthony Rizzo and Alex Verdugo, who are both lefties, so he should see some pitches to hit. I think there is a great opportunity for gains in his run production, both runs and RBIs, due to the additions of Juan Soto and the aforementioned Alex Verdugo. Verdugo didn't really pan out the way, you know, a lot of people thought he would when he got brought up with the Dodgers, and then he got shipped over to Boston, and now he's with New York. But he's a solid bat. That's another pretty damn good lineup. You know, I would say the first six, seven spots. I think he's a decent player. I think next year somebody is going to overpay for him.
Yep.
For what he is, but that's, you know, the nature of the beast. But yeah, if I had him and I'm there around, you know, 86, what is that, like seventh, eighth round, just depending on your league size, $15 is pretty reasonable. You know, I would rather have him at $15 than pay $22 for Horner. I'll say that.
Makes sense. I like it.
All right. Who do we got next? Oh, we got Loud Boy in the house. Yeah. Not good. Click on that correctly. What's going on, brother? Appreciate you stopping by. Always happy to have you. We're here talking some ball.
Looking forward to seeing you. Hopefully that happens this weekend.
Yes. It's going to happen. All you got to do is answer the door.
There you go.
All right. Next up, we're going to the defending National League champion, Arizona Diamondbacks, and their player at the Keystone, Ketel Marte. Coming off the board around 115, you can pick him up for $12, which is not bad.
No.
He was a number five second baseman last year. He's going off the board as the 11th second baseman this year. He was just under that 500-point mark last year, 489 points, averaged 3.3 a game, 25 long balls, 82 stakes, scored 94 times, 157 hits. He only stole 8 bases, but still, you'll take it. Hit 276, 358 on base percentage, 485 slugging, good for an 844 OPS. What I really liked, and when you see players really learn to start to control the strike zone, his walks increased, his strikeouts decreased.
Yep.
He's a slight pull hitter, but he's going to need to increase his launch angle to go much beyond last year's 25 home runs. But he hits the ball as hard as anybody in the league. He's in the top 2% in max exit velocity. He was more selective last season. He decreased his swings at pitches outside of the zone by nearly 4%, and that helps to explain his gains in plate discipline. I think he has an excellent chance to repeat last season's run production numbers, hitting second in an exciting Arizona lineup right behind Corbin Carroll and in front of Christian Walker, who we just talked about last week. He's never really been much of a stolen base threat, you know, as evidenced by the 8 last year, but he does have the speed to leg out some doubles and some triples. He's somebody who, his power numbers and a high average had never really aligned in the same season. You know, one year he'll hit 25 home runs, but he'll hit, you know, 276, or the following year he'll hit, you know, 290, close to 300 with 15 home runs.
Right.
If he can ever put that together in the same season, you're looking at a legit top five second baseman and somebody who is going to well outperform his ADP and auction values that we're seeing now. I don't necessarily know that I'm going to bet on that happening this season, but I think there's a very, very good chance he can replicate last year's stats pretty much across the board. I think there's even an opportunity to gain a little bit with his run production as those young hitters out there mature and really come into their own. Granted, I get it, Corbin Carroll, you know, your rookie of the year, and he played like an MVP for most of the year. But very few players come in and peak during their rookie season.
For sure. Well, you mentioned his, you know, power and hitting haven't really peaked simultaneously. His overall performance has been great, including an OPS plus of over 100 in the last full five seasons. So he's an excellent player, batting consistently in that top half of that lineup you mentioned. I see another 20-90-80 season on the way. I think an ADP or 115 makes him a very safe investment for 2024. I like him.
As do I. I like him better than the dude we're going to talk about next, which makes sense. That's why we have him ranked higher.
All right, headed to the city of brotherly love. Bryson Stott with the Phillies, 105 ADP. Auction value averaging about 14. This guy probably rewarded many fantasy managers who grabbed him on waivers last season, I imagine. Finished number 10 overall, ADP, I already mentioned. 440 points, 2.9 fantasy points per game, slash 280, 329, 419 with an OPS of 747. Played 151 games, batted over 600 times, had 32 doubles. That was third among second basemen, 78 runs, 15 homers, 62 ribbies, and another guy, stolen bases, 31. Had a top three finish in both average and stolen bases. Started the season pretty good, too. Had a 17-game hit streak to begin the season. He's got elite plate discipline. He improves his offensive production in nearly every category from his rookie year. Improved his strikeout rate from the 22 season. He hit 19 or struck out 19.1, dropped it to 15.6 last year. Improved his slugging last year, almost 50 points. I think he'll post a better season than some of his projections. They got him right around 13 homers, 51 RBIs, and 12 stolen bags. That's a significant drop from last year's total. I think the 15 home runs and 25 stolen bases are sustainable. He also batted in the bottom half of the lineup last year. Looking around, it looks like he, you know, it's not even spring training yet, but word around the campfire is he might be batting second this season behind Trey Turner. We'll see. I don't know if that'll happen, as Kyle Schwarber usually was batting lead off a lot. Second base is shallow. I think he's a good value. He could be a potential breakout candidate. Time will tell.
Yeah, I've got some concerns with him, but we're going to get to that in a second, because Blue Jays is making Thai food.
Yeah. I'll take an order, please.
I don't know what pad krah pow is, but sounds good.
Send it.
All right. Bryson Stott. He's somebody, you look at the difference between his batting average and his on-base percentage. He doesn't take many walks. He does make up for it with his excellent contact skills and speed on a base pass. I think his run production numbers can remain the same. I don't look for there to be many gains with his power. His 15 home runs were a career high in both the majors and minor leagues. I think he only had one other season above 10, and that was back when he was at like double A. So he's not a power bat. The one thing that concerns me is he was swinging more pitches outside the zone last year. But he makes contact at those pitches at a blistering 74.4% rate almost 20% higher than the league average. I don't really know how sustainable that's going to be, because when pitchers see that and they know you have a tendency to swing at pitches outside the zone, they're going to start to work further and further and further away. And if you ever want to see an example of that, just go watch Tom Glavine pitch. He was a master of expanding the strike zone through the course of the game, just taking, you know, a half inch here, a half inch there. And the next thing you know, that strike zone is from batter's box to batter's box. You know, all that said, I think we could see a dip in his average. I don't think it's going to be something drastic. He's not going to go from like 280 down to 240, but I wouldn't be shocked if he went from 280 down to 265. And if he does that without drawing the walks, you could see his on base dip to around the 320, 315 mark. I don't think that is him getting on base enough at a high enough rate for them to really want to hit him towards the top of the order. I think, you know, maybe there's a chance he starts out the season there, but if we do see that regression in his on base skills, they'll bump his ass back down.
Yeah, I think they will. Like I said, the projections that I'm looking at were kind of crappy. So I think he'll post a better season than that, but maybe he'll be a sleeper pick, kind of. I don't know how. We'll see.
It's possible. So who we got in here? Look at that. We got Sway. That's right.
Smash them likes.
Smash up the likes. Subscribe. All that shit. Appreciate that, Sway. And we got Blue Yays. Remember those chicks dig the I assume that's supposed to mean long ball commercials. Hell yeah, they do. ESPN used to have the best commercials back in the day. I always liked the Terry Tate office linebacker commercials. And as somebody who works in an office like that, I wish we had somebody just roaming the hallways, getting ready to light people up. It would certainly improve some attitudes around there.
I mean, ESPN is just so different than it was 25 years ago. It's just talking heads yelling at each other, and I don't really care about much of their opinions.
So. Dude, I used to love watching Baseball Tonight.
Yeah.
That was my show. And you know, SportsCenter used to be good and entertaining, and now it's just everybody trying to get their catchphrases over.
It is, I guess. Also, you remember when they just kind of replayed SportsCenter
over and all over? All night long.
And even during the day. And now you just have all these just constant talk shows, and they're all talking about the same shit, talking the same. Yeah, you know, I just don't like it anymore. God.
Yep. ESPN was always my gauge for if I was up too late at night, because if I turned on ESPN and saw two white dudes boxing, I knew it was time to take my ass to bed. Not quite as bad as, you know, staying up till 5 a.m. and then you hear the birds and you just immediately hate your life because you know you should have went to bed like 2 hours ago and you're just going to have to get up soon. All right, we're getting off track here. So, Luis Arraez, the Miami Marlins, coming off the board around 159. You can get him for $8. And this is a dude I remember last year. Everybody was talking about him. Oh, is he going to make a run at 400? No, he's not going to make a run at 400. That's not how this shit works. he was the number 13 second baseman last year. He's a number 14 coming off the board this year. He had a respectable 438 points, averaged 3 a game. 10 home runs, drove in 69, scored 71, had 203 hits, chipped in 30 doubles, had a 354, 393, 469 triple slash, good for an 861 OPS. And he was traded for Pablo Lopez. They did, I believe it was just a straight up trade, Luis Arraez for Pablo Lopez. And it was one of those rare trades where everything really worked out well for both teams. We'll talk about Pablo Lopez, I'm sure, in more detail once we get to our starting pitcher preview. But Luis Arraez did a fantastic job last year, as evidenced by that batting average and on-base percentage. He's an outstanding contact hitter with very little power. He can play first, second, and third, so he may offer some positional versatility as the season progresses, just depending on how many games played he gets at each position. he, because of the lack of power, he's not somebody I want to start at either of the corner infield spots. Those are positions where you're really relying on run production and home runs. He's had more walks than strikeouts each of the past two seasons, which is a massive benefit in points leagues that penalize you for strikeouts. He's somebody who's going to hit leadoff. He should have plenty of opportunity to score runs given how much he gets on base. And you got to understand there's going to be regression with his average and his on-base percentage. But I think his average should remain well above 300. I mean, if he hits, you know, 315, you're not going to be shitty about that. With an on-base somewhere around 35%. He's somebody who is a fantastic counterbalance to a player you draft who is a low average, high power, high run production piece. It really helped to balance out your lineup there. I don't really have high hopes for Miami. I know they kind of hang around and hang around, but looking at that lineup, there isn't really anybody that I fear, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see some regression from that team as a whole. So that could limit some of his run production, but it again, it's not like he's driving in 100 and scoring 100. I think if you can get 130 combined runs plus RBIs, and you know he'll give you 8 or 9 home runs, he's not going to swipe any bags, but he will chip in with the extra base hits. 30 doubles is a damn good, respectable number. Considering where you're getting him, I mean, he's not free. He's somewhere in the, you know, 14th to 17th round, again, just depending on league size. I think the $8 might be a little bit steep, just depending on your league. If you're in a roto league, I think he's more valuable there than he is in points leagues. But, you know,
I think the other way.
Think so?
Yeah.
Why is that?
He hasn't hit for power. He's got a career ISO of 101, and he's not stealing bases, which means you aren't getting in position to score. He only scored 71 times with 69 RBIs. I don't know. I just think it's higher. It was better in points leagues.
That's fair. That's fair. We can agree to disagree.
Sure.
But yeah, overall, where you're getting him, you know, when you're drafting in those, you know, late mid rounds, early late rounds, which just sounds weird now that I've said it and I instantly regret it. Regardless, you know, where he's going, I think he's a decent value there. But if I'm in an auction league, I'd be happier getting him for $5 than $8.
Yeah. Does have those elite hitting skills, strikeout rate of 5.5%, contact percentage 93.8, and the swinging strike 3.1 last season. Yeah. But yeah, 10 home runs, doesn't really, his career barrel rate's 3% and hard hit rate career is 27. His hard hit rate, he hovered around 30% in 2021 and 22 and the drop 25 last season. But still hit a career high 10 home runs. So I don't always get it, but I don't think he'll hit 354 again. His expected batting average last season was, I think, 3.25. We'll see. He's kind of one of those, what do they call him? Empty batting average kind of player.
Yeah.
But like you mentioned, he's a nice offset to a power only guy. Okay. Oh boy. Cleveland, Ohio. Just the place I love to go.
The mistake by the lake.
Yeah. Andrés Giménez, ADP of 111, going for about $13. Finished 13th overall, second baseman. 410 points, 2.7 points a game, slash 251, 314, 399 with an OPS of 712. Played most of the season, 153 games. Hit 27 doubles, 15 homers, 62 ribbies, scored 76 runs, 30 stolen bases, fifth among all second basemen. He had a good 22. Mostly attributed to a great BABIP of 353, but last year was not so good for him. Other than his 93rd percentile sprint speed, his offensive metrics don't indicate a return to that 2022 breakup. His contact percentage has increased in consecutive years, but it was still just 77% last season, barely above league average. His swinging strike has also dropped in consecutive years, but still worse than the league average at 12.4. And what else do I got there? Max velocity down the last two seasons in a row. I guess he's fairly priced as second baseman go, but his inconsistent performance and lack of plate discipline, I think, tanks his overall value.
See, I'm a little bit higher on him. You know, I think he's got a halfway decent combination of launch angle, pull percentage, and hard hit percentage. I think 15 to 18 home runs is legit for him. There's not going to be much more than that. And he's somebody who's going to see plenty of pitches to hit, batting in front of Jose Ramirez. When you get to second baseman, especially, you know, around this area, every one of them is going to have warts of some kind. Not everybody can be Mookie Betts. But I like that. To me, he strikes me as a back of the baseball card type player. What do I mean by that? Generally, as time goes on, players are the stats that you see on the back of their baseball card. And when you look at his stat line from 2022 and 2023, they were damn near identical. I think, you know, maybe you see a little bit of regression with the stolen bases and, you know, if he does, especially if he doesn't get on base as much, he only gets on base 31% of the time as it is. So, you know, you may not get that amount there, but I think, you know, 15 home runs, 25 stolen bases, I think is a reasonable expectation. You're not going to get a whole lot out of these second basemen at this point in the draft. You're going to get maybe one category or two out of them. And really, you're just hoping that they're not a giant crater in your fantasy lineup. You know, they paid the dude. They gave him a nice $100 million contract. Cleveland seems like a team that is always in like a perpetual state of rebuilding.
Yeah.
You know, they'll have a decent run and then they'll blow it up. You know, he's at $13. I ain't paying that for him though, quite frankly, because if I'm paying $13 for a second baseman, I want there to be upside.
Yep.
And I don't really see it with him. I'm not necessarily saying last year was a career year, but looking at his batted ball profile and looking at his plate discipline, I don't really see where the gains are going to be. The one big thing that he has going for him is he's a witch with the glove. So he's going to be out there every damn day or close to it. So there's some more opportunity there, I guess. But yeah, he's appropriately ranked at 12, I believe.
I think so too. And the Guardians aren't expected to be competitive, I don't think, at all this season. So.
No, piss on Ohio.
Pretty much. Okay. Let's see. Let's do, we're done with that. Second base preview, shortstop preview coming up on Thursday night at 7. MLB news and notes. We haven't had this in a minute. Talk about some recent thing that's been happening in Major League Baseball. Spring training starts for the Dodgers and somebody else, I think, starts Friday. Pitchers and catchers report. Yes. Most other teams are next week, right around the 14th, 15th. I think most teams are reporting. So it's that time. It's what a time to be alive. Spring training. Gotta love it. I saw Clayton Kershaw resign with the Dodgers today.
Yeah, 1 year with a player option for 2025. Gotta remember he had surgery in the offseason. He's going to take his physical on Thursday, which coincidentally or not so coincidentally is the first day they can place him on the 60-day IL. I'm not looking for him to come back until mid-June. And if you get to mid-June, think after the All-Star break because, you know, what's a couple of weeks. He is getting up there in years, but he is just so damn good still.
Yeah. I think with the additions they made there in Los Angeles, I don't think there's a huge rush to bring him back anyway. These are the glenohumeral ligaments. So they stabilize like the ball at the end of your arm. They stabilize that into the socket there of the shoulder blade. That's something you make sure you want 100% healed. It's 4 to 6 months heal time for a layperson. So imagine what it should be for a professional athlete. He's over only averaged about 138 innings from season 2016 to last season. Even though you had the pandemic shortened season, which was what, 60 games, 70 games, yep, something like that. So we'll see. What else?
Looks like Jorge Soler might be headed out to San Francisco. Nothing set in stone yet. I was kind of hoping Detroit would take a look at him. He's going to add a much needed power bat to that lineup. Last year, Wilmer Flores led the team with 23 home runs. Understand the Jorge Soler that you've seen hit, 45 plus home runs. That's not going to happen in San Francisco. It's not. That is a ballpark that suppresses home runs. But at the same time, there's no reason he couldn't be in the low to mid 30s, maybe, because you do have to remember playing half their games on the road with a few trips to Colorado. So he'd be a damn good get for them. From a fantasy perspective, look, he's somebody who's going to be cheap. Last year, he was a waiver wire pickup.
Yeah, he was.
He went undrafted.
Right here, buddy.
And, maybe you take a flyer on him somewhere around the 20th round or something like that, because for whatever reason, people just don't believe in this guy. They don't believe he's going to sustain that production from year to year. I'll happily take him with a late round pick, or, I'll throw a buck or two on him.
Yeah. Dubo wants to know what our thoughts on Trevor Bauer are. He's just a free agent, isn't he? He's not overseas anymore or anything. That's the last place I knew he was.
I've not heard a whole lot about him, and I can't imagine many teams are eager to bring him in, just considering, setting aside the most recent events with whatever the hell happened with him and that lady. Quite frankly, there's only two people in the world who know what happened, and it's him and her, and they're each telling their own version of events. I've not really heard a whole hell of a lot about it recently. Quite frankly, he's a damn good pitcher, but I don't think he's worth the headache that would come along with signing him. It's going to be a PR shit storm.
Yeah. And he's 33 as well. So he's entering the end of his career.
Yeah, he talks a lot of shit too.
Yeah,
a lot of shit
he does. All right, let's talk some NFL news and notes, guys and gals, whoever's on here. What you guys all think about some of the coaching things that are going on? More recently, you saw Kellen Moore as the new OC in Philadelphia. Gonna try and turn down an Eagles offense that pretty much fucking collapsed last season. During his time in Dallas, he saw a couple top 10 offenses in his tenure there, including I think a couple top ranked in 19 and 21. So he was with the Chargers last season. That was a disaster with injuries and Brandon Staley getting fired. So I guess it's what I looking at some things and stuff on PFF and some other stat sites that we use. Pre-snap motion. Do you know the Eagles were dead last at 10.9%? It's crazy.
I mean, their offense essentially became the tush push and the setup to the tush push.
Tush push. Yeah.
What the hell is his name? Brian Johnson. That was their OC last year. I believe it was. In a vacuum, he wasn't awful. The offense just got too predictable. And when things started to sputter and the team hit a skid there towards the end of the season, it just simply did not have the experience to understand how to deal with that. I think it was a fantastic move to bring in a veteran coordinator like that, both on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball, to really help steady the ship.
It will.
There's a lot of talent there. I think you're going to see some turnover on the offensive line. So they may not be as good in that regard as they have been in years past, but I think bringing in those veteran coordinators like that was definitely the right move. Kellen Moore, to me, has never really been somebody who has been an innovative offensive coordinator, but I think he has a very good understanding of how to utilize the personnel he has available to him to get the most out of them. You know, you set aside last year, it was a shit show. There was some good years, you know, again in Dallas. So, and he's somebody who, when you think back over the past few years, he was, you know, a hot name, up and coming offensive coordinators, and they wanted to keep him around there in Dallas. Now they let him walk because Chubby Mike McCarthy decided that he was going to call plays.
Yeah.
Chubby. And now he'll get an opportunity to have his revenge.
He will. Obviously it starts with, you know, him and Jalen Hurts, forming a, you know, connection and focused on what Jalen Hurts wants and what's works for him. And what the pre-snap motion, it just doesn't make any sense. Do you know how much confusion you can cause on the defense with pre-snap motion? It's crazy. I just do not understand why you were dead last in the league in pre-snap motion. So it doesn't make sense.
And it's not even, you know, looking at it from the through the lens of offensive innovation, like I was just talking about a minute ago. By using it, like, you're not splitting the atom. You're not reinventing the wheel. You right. Look what they do, you know, in Miami and San Francisco. Detroit uses a lot of it.
The top offenses run it. They're all at the top of the list. So a little bit different.
Hold that thought. Blue Yays has questions. Vladdy's Arb thoughts. So we talked about Vlad Guerrero last week.
We did.
And I really think that the renovations they made there at the Rogers Center have helped to sap a lot of his power. I think if he stays there in Toronto, I don't necessarily know that you're going to see another 45 home run season. You know, Kyle, you brought up the point of he doesn't really seem like he has the greatest work ethic. I don't know. They may not even extend him. I think he'll do decent in arbitration. But yeah, he's a damn enigma is what he is.
Sure is. I popped the link in there for you, Blue Yays. It was last Tuesday's episode there. Matt's got it timestamped, so you can go right to him. We probably talked about him for 4 or 5 minutes, but he had all his dingers in.
Yeah, because they were playing, where was it? At Dunedin and in Buffalo.
Yep.
If I remember right.
Yep. COVID. Yep. Jesus. That's true. I forgot about that. Another OC, well, and head coach, the Commanders. What you guys think about that? Dan Quinn got the head coaching job. Doesn't make sense to me. Going from one defensive coach in Ron Rivera to another one. I mean, he is a good defensive coordinator with the Cowboys and the Seahawks and head coach of Atlanta as well. So, but Cliff Kingsbury got hired as the OC there, and he's going to bring his air raid offense there. And I don't think that's going to work, right, Matt?
Well, I don't think it does. And if you look what he did in Arizona, yeah, Blue Yays, right. He just got the cover of MLB The Show. Maybe that'll be like the new Madden curse. Right. the issue that they had there in Arizona was they didn't have the wide receivers to run the air raid like he wanted to run it, but he also didn't have the wherewithal to see that, understand the situation, and then adapt his offense based on his personnel.
Yeah.
And now he comes to Washington. Jerry McLaurin, damn good receiver, damn solid. Jahan Dotson, I've spoken at length in my opinion of him and, you know, what he did to my team. But who else do you have behind him? Like Dyami Brown?
Curtis Samuel. Yeah.
Curtis Samuel's free agent.
Yeah. Right. Free agent.
Like, you know, defensive coordinators are not losing sleep wondering what the hell they're going to do about Dyami Brown.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and an air raid, usually you're out there running four wide receivers and one running back. So you're going to need somebody, and one ain't going to be enough because they'll just try and shut him down.
Right. And that's going to be a big ask to run an offense like that with a rookie quarterback. And Kyle, you and I were talking earlier, you know, Drake May ran a very similar offense in North Carolina. Awesome. Good for him. The speed of the NFL game and the speed at which you need to process all of that information,
right,
is so much faster. That is such a huge leap from college to the NFL. He's a good offensive mind, but you're also talking about a guy who couldn't win at Texas Tech with Patrick Mahomes.
That's true. That's true. And correct me if I'm wrong, air raid, usually like the O-line spreads out a little bit more than normal. They're like half yard apart, when in theory you think that that probably allows, you know, bigger blitz lanes, but it forces, you know, the defensive ends and other defensive players to run further to reach the quarterback. So quick short passes are going to work real well with that to offset the blitz. But like you said, a rookie quarterback projected to be there this year, whoever it's going to be, it's tough.
It is. Yeah, Bluyes, he's fading. Vladdy, I get it. And here's an underrated aspect of going through, or I don't know necessarily underrated is the wrong word, but it's an aspect that's not talked about. When you go through arbitration like that, especially if you get to the hearing, you know, meaning you and the team can't settle, so you go in front of the arbiter, they are going to roast you. They are going to point out every single thing that you do wrong in an effort to only pay you what they absolutely have to. And there are a lot of players out there that when they go through that process, it can really hurt the relationship you have with the manager, with the front office, because, you know, you spend all this time of them telling you, you know, you're doing this awesome job. And all of a sudden you get into this formalized meeting and it's like, this dude, piss on him. You know, we want to keep him, but we don't want to give him a whole hell of a lot. Now, if you'll just sit down and listen, we'll tell you all the reasons that you suck.
So for that matter, I don't love the arbitration in Major League Baseball. I don't like that whole system.
No, I'm not a fan of the years of player control.
Same. It's forever.
Pretty much.
It's too long. It's too long. What is it? 7 years? 8 years?
It just depends on when they get called up during a season. In theory, it's 6 years. But, you know, if you wait, you know, think about what the Cubs did with Chris Bryant. You wait a month and get that seventh year of team control while still having the player up on the big league roster for, you know, 5 months instead of six.
Yeah. Well, heck yeah. All right. Take us out.
All right. Thanks everybody for watching. Really, really appreciate it. We're going to be back on Thursday talking about shortstops. We're going to be talking about the Super Bowl as well. We'll give you our picks for the game. Maybe we'll give you maybe a lock or two. I know.
I think so. I got a couple in my,
we'll do that. Right. You know, it quite frankly is a legitimate profitable gambler. You should that's true. What I have to say.
That's so true. Yeah. I was, -400, I think last year. So not good. Right. Not, I mean, could have been worse obviously, but,
right. Everybody starts somewhere.
That's right.
Sweet. Everybody starts somewhere. So again, appreciate all you guys coming by. Bluyes, glad to have you back. Kip, Buff, Dubo, you're our day ones. All four of you is our, we really enjoy chatting with you guys, and now this shit's running long and I'm getting hungry. So yeah, we will talk to you all Thursday. Yeah.
Don't forget to like and subscribe there, other viewers. Going to be back Thursday. Rankings are on the website, stonedonsportspodcast.com. Dubo was burning one. Love it, man.
See, we got one dude burning one. We got another making Thai food.
Yep, I'll be there in about 30 minutes, Dubo. About the same spot. All right, there folks. Have a great night. We'll see you on Thursday. Later.